Blog Talk Radio.
Until the philosopher which owes one race superior and another inferior is finally and permanently discredited and abandoned. Everywhere is war. It's a war that until they're no longer first class and second class citizens of any nation. Until the color of a man's skin is of no more significance than the color of his eyes. Mr. War, that until the basic human rights are equally guaranteed to all without regard to race. Mr. War, that until that day, the dream of lasting peace was citizenship, rule of international morality. Will remaining but the fleeting illusion will be pursued, but never attained. Now everywhere is war. War. And until the ignoble and unhappy regime that holds our brothers in Angola, in Mozambique, South Africa, subhuman bondage, have been toppled, totally destroyed, where everywhere is war. War in the east, war in the west, war up north, war down south, war, war, the rumors of a war. And until that day, the African continent will not know peace. We Africans will fight, we find it necessary, and we know we shall win, and we are confident in the victory of good over evil.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I thank my colleague for yielding. I appreciate this time to speak on behalf of my congressional district, which I lovingly call the 13th District Strong. Mr. Chair, instead of working on behalf of students, Secretary DeVos is enriching predatory for-profit colleges that leave students with crushing debt and useless degrees. And I rise today because we have to stop it. If you want to see harm caused by the legacy of the DeVos-led policies, look no further than my district. In fact, students in Michigan will suffer for years to come because of her consistent record of putting for-profit interests first. And who are Secretary DeVos's latest targets? Student borrowers who were defrauded by large for-profit colleges. Scams, Mr. Speaker. I heard from one constituent in my district who was deceived by a for-profit college that suddenly, with no notice, zero notice, closed its door 6 months into her one-year program. Now she is burdened with thousands of dollars in loans and nothing to show for them, not even a certificate or a diploma. She did apply for the forgiveness program through the Department of Education, but was denied. And if we don't stop this latest DeVos rule, we will guarantee that my constituent will bear the burden of unfairly paying for a diploma she has never received. It is outrageous that our residents are the ones being punished instead of protected from this type of fraud and abuse. And sometimes I think these words, fraud and abuse, are just not strong enough. These are scams, criminal activity by these corporations coming in and targeting communities like mine that are majority people of color. You look at the advertisement, they are targeting specific communities where I have a number of single mothers who want to go back to school and better their lives, or other folks that are non-traditional students that they target. And again, these are the most vulnerable communities that we all represent. We need to stop Secretary DeVos from this relentless effort to protect the bottom line for corporations at the expense of our residents, the students.
So that was Rashid Tlaib, Congresswoman from the district in Michigan, 13th District, and she's a fighter. And, you know, now she's fighting for the wrong cause, as many Michiganders and many Americans and Democrats especially are wondering, you know, where she has gone wrong, because recently she called for Democrats in Michigan, the primaries coming up, that, you know, they're not voting for Joe Biden. So what's that all about? You know, maybe Lori and, you know, people calling can fill us in on what's going on in Michigan and District 30 and why, you know, Rashid Tlaib, the congresswoman there, is so, you know, against Joe Biden. Welcome to the broadcast, everybody. Glad you could be on the big show with us. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico.
Hi, this is Lori Pickup from Michigan, and I can certainly go through and talk a little bit about her, Rashida Tlaib, the 13th District of Michigan. Yeah, she is a Democrat in name, and I think a lot of her policies are Democratic. I mean, at least they were in the past, until Israel was attacked, and then until Israel decided to relentlessly attack Gaza. And I truly understand that part of the story. I truly understand the fact that, you know, Israel was attacked, and then Israel retaliated, and then attacked Gaza unrelentlessly, killing thousands and thousands of Palestinians. I understand that. We all understand that. We all understand the grief, the hurt, the suffering. We understand it all. But what I don't understand is, why would she, and she has a primary coming up too, why would she now, you know, go on, you know, Twitter and in different areas in the state where she, in her district, I mean, and go there and tell them, you know, not to vote for Biden. If Biden becomes the, you know, the candidate with Trump, if they run together, and that's, we know it's 99.9%, that's how it's going to be, then is she telling her constituents, don't vote for Biden? What, they're supposed to vote for unknown or not vote at all? Well, that's like a vote for Trump. So that's a stupid, in my opinion, a very stupid way to go at this. And if she is so upset, then she set up a meeting with him. I'm sure that he would talk to her. He is the type of man that would talk to her. He's very busy. And President Biden was on the phone last week. He was on the phone this weekend. He's trying his damnedest to have Netanyahu stop or curtail for a while. And, you know, the bombing and the torture. And I, like I said before, I get that. I get all of that. But we have an important election. This is the most important election in my eyes that I have ever been involved in or cared about, because we are fighting for our democracy. And then if we have someone that's fighting against our democracy because they're mad at a policy, you know, that President Biden has done, has, you know, said he was going to support Israel, well, you know, un-American, because he's the president, it's his opinion, and I understand that she is a congresswoman, I understand that, but she also has to understand that she has a bigger responsibility, and that is to save our help save our democracy in this country. That's what I'm so angry about. She do it in different
and
ways.
Yet,
there's different ways of doing things.
Yes, and I understand your perspective, but looking at her perspective, her constituents who she represents is mostly Muslim, mostly from the Middle East, and probably mostly Palestinian, you know, so she's between a rock and a hard place. Say that again?
Not all of them, no. I have friends.
Well, no, not all of them. I get that. But, you know, the people who voted her in, she has to speak for their interests. And, like, oh, she's a Palestinian American, then you can see where she's coming from. But, you know, it's a delicate situation. And, you know, we'll have to, like, walk on eggshells, basically, because, you know, whoever said anything, either supporting one side or the other, they're going to get come down hard on. You know, call her anti-Semite or anti-Islam or Islamophobe, which we're not on the show. We're for equal rights and justice, women's rights, LGBTQ rights, everybody. You know, so we just want to hear everybody's side. We're not really taking sides, but, you know, Israel was attacked on October 7th, 2023. And, you know, you have to expect them to retaliate. And with Iran and neighbors wanting them to be wiped off the face of the earth, you can understand Israel's position as well. You know, so before we go any further, the opening song was War by Bob Marley. Mm-hmm. And speaking of Bob Marley, y'all have to go see One Love, Bob Marley. That movie is outstanding. Mm-hmm. You know, a little bit a Hollywood flash and pizzazz here and there. But for the most part, what I saw was brilliant. Brad Pitt and Ziggy Marley were executive producers. And the guy who played played Bob Marley played an excellent role. I thought I was looking at Bob Marley himself. You know, because as you know, or anybody out there who knows me, knows that I grew up around and with Bob Marley and some of his children went to school together. And, you know, seeing Bob Marley on screen, it's like a good flashback, you know. So go and see that movie. It's worth it. Mm-hmm. Yes, man. And later on in the week, Thursday coming up, February 22nd, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Mountain Time, tell all your friends, especially if you're from Congressional District 10 in Michigan, that we'll have an outstanding guest. She's running for the Congressional District in District 10, and her name is Diane Young, and you can visit her website, www.dianeyoungforcongress.com. She's going up against John Jay, and she's currently running for a Democratic nomination, and, you know, hopefully she'll get it, you know, because we need more women in the United States House and in the Senate and across the board, whether it's State House, whether it's State Senate, whether it's Council, City Council, whether it's Mayor for a town or whatever. We need more women in the process because women keep the backbone steady and strong in American society. And we'll have a lot of single mothers out there who, you know, don't have the help of a father or they're not married or whatever, but they're going out there and, like, you know, grinding every day. And, you know, who better to serve in the United States Congress than Diane Young? You know, she's a Michigan, you know, she has grown children. She's been married for years, you know, so she's going to come on and tell us what she's about and her campaign and how it's going and everything. So glad to have her this Thursday starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Mountain Time. I hope everybody could join for that, you know, conversation and call in and ask her your questions and what have you. We plan to have her for about an hour or so. You know, it's a two-hour show and everything, but we don't want to, like, overwhelm her. Or she was sufficient enough. And, you know, her campaign team is working well and doing good and grinding every day, you know. And she's a fighter, you know. She knows what District 10 needs in Macomb County. And John James is not it, because John James is just a yes man to Trumpism and Donald Trump. And we can see that Republicans unable to, you know, govern. It's the one thing, do another thing. Look out for corporations, look out for the 1%. But the regular Joe is squeezing the middle class and, you know, like trampling the working class folks in Michigan, District 10, and all over the country. So we look forward to having Diane Young this Thursday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Yes, ma'am. So it's been advertised on Facebook. It's going to be advertised on our website, www.kitchenpolitics123.com. We thank everybody for listening and tuning in. And any and everything is up for discussion tonight. The events of the past week is discussed and what to look forward to in the coming week. You can call in 515-605-9802. Say your first name and where you're calling from. Turn off all background noises as it is distracting to the host. and other listeners can go to our website, kitchenpolitics123.com. And please, when you call in, no eating, no dishwasher in the background, no noise, please. It's rude, okay? So having said that, we're not antisocial, just anti-stupid. Let's get mm-hmm. cooking. Doris, calling in from Michigan. Hello, Doris. What's cooking tonight?
Hi. Well, I'm not going to say hi. I wrote a whole long thing, Lori, but then I just put it away. It's too long. But I'm just going to say a few things. It won't be a long thing.
Doris,
my feeling.
I did read it.
But I didn't send it.
No, you did. You sent it to, you messaged, yes, you did. You texted me with it. Was it yesterday?
A long one about Israel?
About the doctor?
Oh, the doctor, American doctor? Yeah.
Yes.
I'm trying to put things out that people will say, well, those are just Hamas or those are whatever. In other words, I already know this. People are going to say, well, if it's not Israel saying it, they don't know if it's true. But the problem is, I think, that they believe everything the Israeli government says. I don't. But given that, the thing with Rashida Tlaib, you know, she was censured by 20 Democrats, which because she used the words from the river to the sea, I have a problem with that, but I won't go into that. The fact that basically nothing has affected Netanyahu in any way. In other words, we can say he's calling, he's asking this, but basically we have not done anything, and we never, ever have with Israel. Never seen us take a stand with Israel. So I'm just saying that's clear. Everybody knows that. So when these people are dying and their families, I know Palestinians here, their families are actually from Nazareth and they have relatives. But what she's seeing with her congregation, the people that she is representing, including many Arabs, like you said, there's nothing she can say to them to tell them, well, Biden is trying, but you see absolutely no actions taken, like we're not going to send you money, we keep sending the money. That is a desperate situation in her eyes. And what she said, I'm not saying for or against it, but I think I understand. When she said, vote uncommitted in the primary, I'm going to vote for Biden. We're going to vote for Biden. She's going to vote for Biden. But she has got nothing that she can see tangible of anything done with Netanyahu. He basically, in his own way, said go to hell to Biden. And we don't put any bars on them, and that is problematic. But I'm just saying, I don't... go ahead.
I think that it's going to come to a boil with Biden. I truly do, because I know that he is constantly, I hate into this because to me, I feel like he is starting to shift his idea, because I think in the beginning, just like all of us, we were all shocked, did we ever think Israel would be so, how do I say it? Murderous. I mean, just day after day after bombing and not stopping and bombing, and no, I don't think any of us saw this coming. And I think Netanyahu, he does it to keep in power. And how the wheels move very slow for everything, for justice, for politics, for war, everything moves slowly. And I do believe that Biden will come to a boiling point, and he will probably have it out. I know Blinken was there again, asking them to stop, he was just there again. He's been there, like 8 times already? I mean, how much more can they honestly accept, tell them, point blank, no more money?
Laura, my thing is that, we'll give Israel since 1948 when they were founded, billions of dollars a year. And what they do with this money, they give their citizens free education, free health care, develop the military. And, good, they develop the military and what have you. But last year alone, $3.5 billion. Okay, so we should have a say in the Middle East. Can I make my point? We should have a say in the Middle East, giving them all this money to say, hey, carpet bombing the crap out of Gaza. What is that accomplishing? Are you trying to take over the people's land? you know, and that's not fair to innocent Palestinians who have nothing to do with Hamas or anything. Because not everybody supports Hamas. There's a Palestinian Authority who a lot of people support in the Middle East, in Gaza, and in the West Bank. And the Palestinian Authority, Yasser Arafat was the leader of that. No, I can't remember the name of the leader, no. You know, but they're more progressive compared to Hamas, you know, and Israel should stop and everybody come to the peace table and negotiating table and talk this out, because bombing Gaza and flatten it and turn it into rubble is not solving anything. You know, babies, pregnant women, you know, innocent people who have nothing to do in politics are being murdered, killed, slaughtered every day. In the United States, we giving them money on a yearly basis. You know, we should have a say and say, Israel, enough of this. And like you said, Biden is getting impatient with Netanyahu, because Netanyahu is basically a Trump. You know, what he's doing before this war started, he was in court and they were going to impeach him and remove him as prime minister. But, you know, according to reliable sources in the media, Newsweek, Time, you know, they're saying that the Mossad, which is the CIA version of Israel, knew very well what was going to happen October 7th, but they need an excuse. Netanyahu need an excuse, the carpet bombing Gaza. You know, so other people will get involved, like Iran supporting West Bank and supporting militias and militants who hate Israel and don't want to be, want them to be on the face of the earth. You know, so it's leading up to a really serious situation where, you know, the outbreak of World War III may happen. And in Ukraine, the Republicans will give them the farm in terms of this border bill, but yet they will refuse to, you know, send money to Ukraine and Israel. You know, so, you know, the Republicans, as you say, you know, they cannot govern and everything. And we'll have to go out there and vote in this November and everything. Diane Young and Kelly in District 1 in Michigan, and a lot of Democrats out there across, you know, the United States, even in competitive races that should be competitive, we need them to get onto the show and state the case to the American people and just go out there and win and keep winning, because Republicans is not a solution. You know, Republicans are daft, dense. They don't care about women. They don't care about health care. They don't care about anything but themselves, you know, and they're just retarded, you know. So we'll have no, okay, 515-605-9802. Hello, Elaine. Welcome to the show. What's cooking?
Oh, nothing much.
Thanks. How are you?
Getting back to Rashida. She has got a history here in Michigan of bad-mouthing her own party. That's number one. Number two, she has not made one comment, not one, that I know of, against what Hamas did. That doesn't set very well with a lot of people. Hamas is wrong. She has never stated that. Yes, Israel is wrong. We have talked about this on the show back to October 7th. I know I have stated that as far as I was concerned, Netanyahu and Trump come off the same damn tree. Netanyahu was they wanted to get rid of him, and I think he knew this attack was coming, and he is using this to stay in power. All right? There we go. Now, she is in a position to be able to talk to leaders.
Yes.
She is in a position to have a peaceful, strong arm talk. Andy Levin, who is not in office, got on TV today.
Yep.
He is very Jewish. He is against what's going on. He said, people are people. You don't massacre people. Now, if Andy Levin is willing to get on TV and say, we need to sit down, we need to talk and get this straightened out, why can't she? No, she has got a record of rolling up people. When she goes to speak somewhere, she walks in with a chip on her shoulder.
Yeah, she does rile up people.
This is not fair to what's going on.
No.
And as Lori said, and as the rest of the country that has any kind of brains in their head knows, if we end up for any idiotic reason and we put that monster back in office, this country is going to hell.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
what's going on with the people over there is wrong. It is totally wrong. I understand that every bomb that drops, they don't look at it as Israel dropping it. They're looking at it as Israel and the United States because there is a name on the bomb. The bomb is made here.
Right.
This is where Rashida could get together and she could talk to people from all sides, all kinds of very smart, peaceful people.
Yeah.
And an agreement could be worked out. I am not going to dictate the agreement. That is up to those two countries to come to some sort of agreement.
Yeah.
Not Rashida. She is not a Palestinian anymore, and she is not an Israelite anymore. She is an American, I hope.
Well, she is a descent. She is a Palestinian by, she was born
there. An American.
A Palestinian American.
Palestinian ancestry. And if she wants to continue pushing her narrative, then I do not consider her an American. I'm sorry. She is an American first. We are also fighting for our democracy in this country.
Yeah. No, we are. And that is what got me so upset. I mean, I understand the frustration. I mean, I think it's frustrating. I think it's horrible. I truly do think it's horrible that this man has carpet bombed, like David said, a country to rubble. It's nothing. If you see pictures of it, it is nothing. There's nothing but stone left. It's awful.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that you cannot...
I mean, when
cannot,
I see children scraping the bottom of a pan, reaching over and thinking that he got his fingernails in a little bit of food and then scraped that food off to take it home to his family... I see it. So does Rashida. Rashida is in a position to do good, not open her mouth and cause more trouble. That's what's angering me. She is in an elected position to be able to get people together to talk.
Yes, I agree with you. And that's what I was thinking as well, that she is in a position, and instead of, instead of starting a fire, that's what she's trying to do, start a fire. What good is that doing by telling them to vote unknown or whatever she said in the primary?
Uncommitted.
Pick up stones and try to build a fence, a good fence or a good foundation. Don't throw stones. Pick up stones and gather some cement to cement it together for some good. Yeah. But that is not what she's doing.
No. And I don't think she understands, the politics part of it, or the part where, voters that like Biden think he's done good for the country, and then she comes along, and because of her, because she is of Palestinian descent, which I understand that. I've never said that I don't understand that. But, and I agree with Elaine, she is an American now, and she has American constituents. I have a couple of friends in Livonia. They're mad at her. I mean, they're mad at her because she can't say this kind of stuff. They want to vote for Biden.
Mm-hmm.
It's not right.
So Tlaib, Congresswoman Tlaib, who is Palestinian-American, cited her dissatisfaction with the Biden administration's role in the war between Israel and Hamas as her reason for urging people to vote uncommitted. And I quote, she was saying this by Bullhorn earlier, it is also important to create a voting bloc, something that is Bullhorn to say, enough is enough. We don't want a country that supports wars, bombs, and destruction. We want to support life. We want to stand up for every single life killed in Gaza. That's what she said. So she added that, quote, this is the way you can raise your voices. Don't make us even more invisible. Right now, we feel completely neglected and just unseen by our government, end quote. You know, and, you know, you can understand, but, you know, every country is represented here.
She has got the best leaders to take and pick up the telephone and talk to, such as Nancy Pelosi. Mm-hmm. Nancy Pelosi has sat down with her before. I'm sure mm-hmm. she could pick up the telephone. She could say, Nancy, I am so angry. I don't know how to express myself. I'm sure Nancy mm-hmm. would sit down with her, and she could do good, not cause
yes.
chaos.
Yes. Yes. And because of our outburst and, you know, from the river to the sea comments in November mm-hmm. last year, 1 month after Hamas attacked Israel, Congresswoman Tlaib was censured by the House floor for certain remarks she made about the war, including the use of the phrase from the river to the sea, which has been used by Hamas and has been condemned by Jewish groups as an anti-Semitic call for the elimination of Israel. So Biden won Michigan mm-hmm. in 2020 presidential elections by 3 percentage points. And a state will likely, again, be crucial for the potential path to victory in November for Democrats and Joe Biden. So mm-hmm. asked about Tlaib's message urging voters to vote uncommitted in the Democratic primary, Michigan Democratic Party Chair Lavora Barnes, she reiterated the support of Biden and by saying that President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris, what's that knocking in the background, Jesus? President
know.
Joe Biden and Vice President Harris were elected because they promised to deliver for Michigan families, workers, and communities, and they kept their promise. She told us to NBC News recently. So since the war in Gaza began, Biden has been criticized by Muslim and Arab American leaders in Michigan, which has a large Arab American population, particularly in the city of Dearborn, and that is where part of the 13th district where Tlaib represents. Earlier this month, the White House officials visited the state to meet with Muslim and Arab American leaders. Biden himself also visited the state early in February. But the purpose of the trip was to meet the auto workers on the heels of the endorsement from the United Auto Workers Union. So this past Wednesday, Our Revolution, a progressive political organization formed by Senator Bernie Sanders, independent of Vermont, also urged Michigan Democrats to vote uncommitted in the primary. Sanders has distanced himself from the group's position, saying he supports Biden's re-election bid. So the group didn't make clear, though, that while it's pursuing and pushing its members to vote against Biden now, it will back him in November. So, I mean, they're trying to make a point and trying to stand out and what have you, but how dangerous is that for the NPAs Very. Out there, the no political affiliations and the independents? You know, they're going to say, geez, Democrats, you know, they can't unite over this cause, you know. What's wrong with the Democratic Party? And they'll think needle-eye that compared to what yes. Republicans are doing, you know?
Yes.
And you know
yes.
how, you know, flaky this electorate is. You know, some mm-hmm. people are not savvy enough to say, hey, Republicans are doing this mess, and they've destroyed the country in this way, and they try to overturn democracy in January 6, 2021. You know, so compare what Democrats' issues are compared to Republican issues, and you see a vote for Joe Biden and any Democrat running on any ticket, whether federal, local, or statewide, will have to get Democrats in. So, you know, mm-hmm. as Elaine rightly said, come to the table. You have the power. You have the bullet pulpit as a congresswoman mm-hmm. to get people together and iron out differences. Huh. And maybe peace can come to Gaza versus Israel. We'll have Khalil calling from Virginia. Hello, Khalil. Welcome to the show. What's going on?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing? Hey.
Very
good. Excellent.
One of the things I've noticed is, like, when American messes up, like, involves themselves in messing up invading countries or invades other countries, that's how
mm-hmm.
we get the immigration mess that we get, where people are coming over here and they're being forced to come over here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was like, what were you saying?
I just was saying, are you saying what I was thinking you're saying is that what we have done, like in the South America and so on, we have actually disrupted some countries that end up with people coming here as a result of what we did, some of those countries. Is that what you meant?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That is true.
During the Cold War.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's very true.
That's true.
Yeah, during the Cold War, for people who are not familiar, during the Cold War in the 1970s and 80s, even the 1960s, what happened in Egypt, where with the opposed leader that was there, Patrice Mutumba, that was the Democratic Republic of Congo, he was a progressive leader. And because he wasn't stooping down to the CIA and what America wanted, they had him murdered and put in their person. We see it in Panama, where they deposed Manuel Noriega in 1989 because he was getting too big for his britches. He wanted to close down the Panama Canal and have it his way or no way. And George H.W. Bush got rid of him and put in a dictator in liking the United States. We see it in General Pinochet in Chile, 1973, Allende, Fulgencio Allende, he was the democratic socialist that got rid of Allende and put in Pinochet. The new Pinochet was an evil scumbag son of a bitch. But, you know, they say, hey, he's for America's bidding, so he's our son of a bitch. We see it in Iraq, Saddam Hussein. You know, we saw it with Shah in Iran. You know, so destabilization programs have been going on ever since after World War II. And the Cold War, where we tried to get certain nations on our side because we want to contain the spread of communism, the Truman Doctrine, which is all well and good. But, you know, what's the end game? You know, so we got there, destabilize a people's country. And when the Cold War is done and end and gone, we want it in 1989 with the tumbling of the Berlin Wall. We just got up and left. So you expect the people to be resentful. You know, they tried it in the 1970s. If you see the movie, Bob Marley, One Love, it explains it totally where, you know, the Jamaica Labor Party under Edward Seaga was born in Boston, Massachusetts, but grew up in Jamaica, gave up his American citizenship, eventually became prime minister in 1980. He was a reactionary conservative, blue-eyed boy, Ronald Reagan, and then CIA director George Bush. And Michael Manley, his counterpart, was prime minister then. From 1972, Jamaica was declared democratic socialist. And when, you know, the alarms went off in Washington and in Capitol Hill, where when democratic socialist Michael Manley said, yes, Jamaica's democratic socialist, it's equivocate to communism, which is not the case. It wasn't the case.
Correct.
You know, so allegedly, the CIA under the chairman of the CIA or the leader of the CIA, George Bush at the time, had a alleged destabilization program in Jamaica against the Democratic Socialist government of Michael Manley from 1972 right to the 1980 election. It almost caused a civil war and displacement of people. Over 1,000 people were killed in that, you know, that war between the People's National Party, the Democratic Socialists, versus the Jamaica Labor Party, the reactionary right wing, you know, and that was the heights of the Cold War. You know, so you have to put all those things in consideration. When people coming from Jamaica and Central America and South America and even the Middle East, they want a better life because, you know, their country was so messed up because of what we did because during the Cold War, that they need a fresh start. And the people that we put in, you know, they say, oh, you're against us. Perfect example, Allende in Chile again when he died and Pinochet took over. What Pinochet did was go 30,000 feet up in the air in airplanes and all his opponents, you know, they can't be even found to this day. You know, he threw them out or he had his henchmen throw them out 30,000, 40,000 feet up in the air without parachutes. And that is how he got rid of dissent, you know, people who dissented against them. You know, the trial with Fidel Castro. The bear pigs, it flopped miserably. You know, so we'll put all these things in consideration. And so we mess up these countries. That's why people coming in droves saw a better life in America and a fresh new start. And Republicans, you know, are so demagogic in this issue because back in 1980, in that New Hampshire debate between George Bush and Ronald Reagan, they were for immigration reform. You know, so this whole 180 that happened, you know, arguably versus George W. Bush, this president, you know, it's just madness, total absolute madness. It's disgusting because Republicans were for immigration reform, and the best deal, what happened recently, And Speaker Johnson, a Republican, says DOA, dead on arrival. Republicans who work weeks with Democrats to have a bipartisan bill voted against their own goddamn bill. So Republicans don't care. They're fascists. They want their own way 100% of the time. And when we give the farm away to them, they still vote no because why? Donald Trump, that arrogant, egotistical, disgusting son of a bitch, Donald Trump, said no. What does Donald Trump have over these people that have voted against their interests?
You know, we've asked that question over and over again, and I think it's coming to light. I think it's Putin. Mm-hmm. I really do. He borrowed money from the Hitler as well. And I really, and the thing about him is that, you know, the thing about Putin is that I think when he says something, he does it, maybe not right away, just like that prisoner, and I'm sorry, but right now I can't remember his name. You know, he was at
the opposition leader. I can't remember his name.
Yeah,
he
was in prison, and, you know, over the weekend, you know, they took him out of prison, and he was walking. He must have fed him poison, and he died.
Navalny.
Thank you so much, Mr. Curious.
I guess my point is, and he's not the first one he's done that to. We know that. And, you know, all of a sudden jump out of buildings and, you know, like that sort of thing. And so if Trump has anything to do with Putin, like owes him money or owes him favors or knows secrets or anything like that, anything at all, he holds it over his head. I truly do. And so that's part of it, because we don't know if he talks to him or not. You know, we don't know if they communicate. I mean, we don't. So I would not.
Well, the useful idiot, Tucker Carlson was there recently giving him the softball interview. So maybe he gave messages for the in between Putin and Trump.
Well,
who knows?
Talking about that we discussed already, and that's definitely something that I think that they did. You know, I think that they had a plan, and he probably went to Russia, and he probably did, you know, talk to him on behalf of Trump or sent him a message or whatever the case was. That I believe that happened. But I'm just saying, you know, since the election in 2016, you know, and then Russia, are you listening sort of thing, you know, that is what I'm talking about. I think it's been going on for quite a few years now, and I truly believe that there is something, you know, with these, especially the MAGA, the true MAGA ones that had things to do with January 6th and all of that. I think that they're all connected some way, somehow. I do. So that's probably right. And they're, you know, but that's no excuse. Then resign. If you're afraid because of what you did, that's it. But not Trump.
Exactly.
He won't ever do that. He doesn't want to go to prison.
Yeah. And a Russian opposition leader, Navalny, dies in prison after being poisoned by state-developed nerve agents. Al Jazeera English has a three-minute report and everything. But Khalil was making a point. Go ahead, Khalil. I didn't mean to cut you off or anything. I just have to explain.
Also, one of the things that's what I explain to the American people who say we don't go to Mexico illegally. I tell them that the U.S. Mexico hasn't messed up the U.S. like the U.S. has messed up Mexico. And I make that point to people, and the majority of people that hear that point don't comp for that argument. But I counter it with that, you know. If it's not mutual, Mexico didn't sign into NAFTA for the U.S. and all that other stuff, you know. So that's
and
what,
the thing
that's
about that too. Our next point, Khalil, is that this whole fentanyl imports into America that are coming into America, according to Newsweek magazine, and the United Nations World Health Organization had an article about it as well, saying that 86% of fentanyl that come across the borders from Mexico, it's American citizens who's going over to Mexico and bringing them here. You know, so when Donald Trump speaks about, they're rapists and, you know, they're bad people who are coming over the border, that's just fear-mongering and xenophobia. And hopefully the American people can look through Donald Trump's BS and see what an evil, disgusting human being he is. He's trash. He's garbage. He's low on pond scum. And that is why we need to vote for people like Diana Young in District 10, Congressional District 10, because, you know, it's madness. John James is just a rubber stamp. Everything Trump says, he says, yes, master, yes, sir. You know, like Uncle Cletus, you know, House Negro. You know, I can say it because I'm a black man, and I don't care. I apologize. I take it back. He is not, John James does not belong in the United States Congress. Diane Young is qualified. She's able. You know, she's a mother. She's been through, you know, things in her life. She can tell us her life experiences when she comes on the show and everything. And she fight for the people of District 10 in Michigan. You know, the people in Michigan District 10 deserve better. And Congressional District 9 next door have that woman, McLean, Congresswoman McLean. I don't remember what McLean's name. You know? And she's basically Trump 2.0. You know, these people are psycho. They don't belong in the United States Congress. Lauren Boebert,
right about that.
She gets to understand. She's going to get a nomination for Congressional District 4 in Colorado because she ran away from Colorado 3, where she represented and was elected to, because the Democrats outraising her 10-1, you know, and she's just a pile of garbage, you know.
Yep.
She's like, oh, yeah, I'm a family violence conservative, but yet still, you're going out there smoking vape, you know, touching, you know, your dates, you watch it not, you know, and misbehaving and carry on when children are around and everything. You know, look at Kristen Noem, the governor of South Dakota, for example.
Yeah.
Run on family values, but yet still, she and Corey Lewandowski, who was a big person in the Trump administration, you know, having sex. I mean, hey, have all the sex you want, but do not preach to people who they should sleep with or what they should do, you know, the demagogue against the LGBTQ community saying, oh, that's wrong because the Bible says so. You know, not everybody believes in the Bible. You have atheists, you have Muslims, you have different religions. So stop being judgmental and stop, you know, preaching to people what they should do or how they should live their lives. Republicans have had their way too long in this country, and it is time to vote them out. Vote them out. And Michigan is a bellwether state to see where the presidential election is going to go. Biden won it by 3 percentage points. Let it be like 10, 15, double digits, somewhere. Got Trump and Republicans have to go. I digress.
And that's, you're right.
Can I add something to the immigration thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. Take a look at the history of the United States. Yes, the very, very first people that landed here were, well, entrepreneurs of one sort or another. But most of the people that have come to the United States, 99, 100% of them, have been escaping something. Either famine, which was the Irish. England was they couldn't worship the way they wanted to worship.
A king or queen.
There was people that come over before the war from Germany and Poland and Ukraine and Lithuania, all of those countries, they came over before the war because they did not want to be ruled by Russia. And then there was people from Italy that came before Mussolini came for different reasons. Our country was founded on immigration.
Yes, it was.
Well, you know, all of us immigrants invaded the indigenous people. I mean, that's our history.
Yeah.
True.
And, you know, I think that if the people would just settle down and start getting educated and reading and comprehending what the hell they're reading, we wouldn't have all these problems.
I know.
Exactly. So Khalil, in Virginia, what is it like? What's the mood politically in Virginia? You know, do you think that the president will get reelected or they'll vote for him there? What's going on?
I believe that Trump won't get reelected because not only are you you have a lot of progressive people, but you have it's like a swing state now. Like Charlottesville and Northern Virginia are progressive, Altamar County and Southeast Virginia are like right wing. You know, and basically not only that, but also you got like a lot of people. Like Charlottesville has some progressive groups in the town too.
So you think that Joe Biden stands a chance of winning Virginia, hopefully?
Yeah, I do.
I hope so.
I have one thing to say. I was on a trolley bus. You guys heard about the Unite the Right thing, right, in Charlottesville?
No. Tell us about it.
What?
The Right to Life rally in Charlottesville.
Unite the Right from 2017. I have to tell you the strangest thing. I was on the bus, the trolley bus, coming to UVA Corner, and this was during the end of the day, and I saw two people in suits, like dress suits, going to UVA Corner, coming from the federal courthouse. And basically, they had briefcases on and they had suitcases. One was a black woman, the other one was an Asian man. And basically, they got off the bus at the federal courthouse late, almost nighttime, and they got on. They walked to UVA. They walked at the UVA Corner. I found out that it was probably like if they were getting out of the courthouse, they probably were a lawyer or federal police officers.
Right.
Because that was the exact same year that Unite the Right happened.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So in Flint, Michigan, Doris. You know, what's the mood like in Flint, Michigan, in terms of Joe Biden versus Donald Trump 2.0? You know, what's the mood like politically?
Well, actually, there's a Democratic. I think there's a Democratic meeting, maybe tomorrow. I just went to a Democratic meeting. Maybe it's indivisible. Anyway, there's some meeting tomorrow night that I get in touch with people because ever since COVID, there's not been a whole lot of contact with groups like that. But anyway, I don't know. I want to talk to people, and I did go to one Democratic meeting, and I don't think people like to talk about the issue with Israel. I don't think they like to talk about it. One person that I just wrote the one issue, like what happened was bad, but there's been a whole bunch of bad things. But what I wrote and was the Palestinians that are in the West Bank. I wrote this, I think you got it, Lori, and you, David. These are not Hamas. This is not something that just happened with the war, although it got worse when the war broke out there. That they have been continually, this is decades, even before the state was created, okay? They've been pushing them because part of the Zionist philosophy, which I don't know if the UN endorsed that because I don't think they made a big deal of it, was to, quote, transfer the people out of the state. Now, that we're looking for diversity. We accept diversity here. That state is like, no, they want to get the others out. Well, that's been happening a long time. But what I asked is in the West Bank right now, and it's going on otherwhere and in Israel, but in the West Bank, they have been, the settlers are coming. Those are Israeli Jews who are Zionist oriented because not all Jews believe it. I mentioned I belong to the Jewish Voice for Peace. I'm not a Jew, but they want Palestinians to be treated like human beings. And From the River to the Sea came out long before Hamas got ahead of it. And when it was said, and when it was said by Rashida Tlaib, and before that, they would say From the River to the Sea, everyone would be treated as a human being would be equal. And to tell them that they mean you're going to destroy Israel. Hamas is different. That is a way of saying, no, you can't say that, even if you mean that you want it to be everybody to be treated the same. That is going with the Zionists don't want to hear that, and they're going to say you mean that, but I don't think that's right. But I said, when this is happening, this has been going on, Hamas could have said, we're doing this because you keep doing this. You keep killing people and kicking them off their land, destroying their homes. It's not like this is in a vacuum. You just don't hear them talking about those things that are going on. And one person, one lady responded and said, yeah, why is that? Why is it that they don't have the right to defend themselves? Because if they do, the military is going to support the settlers. That is an ongoing. Nobody wants to talk about that. Biden doesn't want to talk about that. But one person wrote, one guy wrote twice, I stand with Israel. He didn't want to have a discussion. And then another thing, he said, I stand with Israel. And I explained something to him about what I'm thinking about. There are innocent people on both sides, da-da-da-da-da. There's governments and there's, you know, groups. And his answer was, no comment, no comment, okay? And then one woman, after I wrote it, she just wrote, could you not send me any more information? So I just blocked her. That's what I'm saying. People don't want to talk about it. I'm very aware of that because those are real issues. They don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, very touchy. You know, you can't get a presidential candidate, you know, to, like, come out, you know, backing one side or another, or even, you know, congressional candidates or Senate candidates up for re-election in 2024, even for governor. You know, it's so touchy. But, you know, on to other things, Trump rally support. He was recently, last night, he was in, where is he? The rat bastard. Waterford Township in Michigan last night.
Oh, yeah.
And he encouraged attendees to vote for him in the presidential primary. And he touched on multiple subjects, including automotive jobs and some justice system. And, you know, he was urging his supporters to send a signal in a swing state of Michigan that long played a key role in his political career. He was speaking from a packed and chilly jet hangar over Waterford Township, and Trump was bullish about his chances to retake the White House in 2024 and unseat his rival, President Joe Biden. So much of his speech was spent criticizing Biden's pivot towards more renewable energy and electric vehicles, playing on fears about the stability of automotive jobs by claiming Biden has ordered a hit job in Michigan manufacturing to do so, which is a lie. All Trump does is lie. You know, you can go far back as when Mitt Romney was running. He said his own words, let the automotive industry die. So Republicans didn't give a damn about Michigan. You know, so Trump and Biden have long made overtures to blue-collar workers in Michigan and have redoubled those efforts in the months since the United Auto Workers strike. So, you know, do you think Donald Trump has a ghost of a chance winning Michigan or not? Are people seeing right through him?
Well, I want to tell you, this is what's in his, this is what Trump, this is what he's saying when he comes here and talks to the different people that work in the union that are probably not, they probably don't pay dues. And what he tells them is that, you know, these electric cars are going to take your jobs away. You know that, don't you? Because as technology goes up, they're not going to need you anymore. And that's what he keeps saying over and over again to them. And they're, you know, and they're afraid that they're going to lose their jobs. That's ridiculous. They will train you for a different job. It is called automation, isn't it? Isn't it called automation? Isn't it called, you know, progress, you know? And of course he's against, you know, green energy, you know, and anything that Biden has proposed because he doesn't care if the planet melts. He doesn't give a damn about it. All he wants to do is drill, baby, drill. We know that. So, you know, if these people are so, these non-union workers are so dumb and afraid to lose their jobs, they should join the union because they have a great union president, a great one.
John,
he's an amazing man. He's an amazing man. And if he were to debate Donald Trump, he would put him 6 feet under with his words. So, you know, I find it laughable that this idiot comes here and tries to scare these people out of their jobs. That's what he's trying to do.
The last time he came, I don't know if it was Detroit, we probably talked about that, he came and paid $2,000 to rent this building that wasn't a union, and they weren't, I mean, it wasn't being operated on, but he had people come carry signs as if they were union workers, as if they were auto workers. So it was a big fake made up thing. Now that should, when I asked him, I asked a person, it's kind of a relative of mine who he's not, I mean, I'm just saying they aren't the well-read. They're not critical thinkers. They're just easily duped. But anyway, when I wrote something and I sent that to him, he got upset and said, you know, the what about? What about there's three for this article about what Trump did, not looking at what Trump actually did. He did a fake thing, paid for something that wasn't real, and then he said there's three articles about Biden's mentality. And I thought, well, they're not even, you know, writing three articles. It's not like you made up a fake story and pretended to be auto workers, and they don't even know how to equate something. And one of the things I said, well, you know, if Biden got all he got done, and whatever his mental state is, he got a hell of a lot done, outstanding since apparently what Reagan did. So whatever he's doing, he works with people. That's another thing. He works with people. He doesn't know it all. He doesn't say he knows it all. I guess you can say all you want about that, but how'd he get all this stuff done?
Exactly. And, you know, the UAW just recently endorsed President Biden. They did, unanimously. Mm-hmm. They endorsed him. And, you know, the useful idiot, you know, goes on to say that he predicted most, and I quote, most of the auto workers going to vote for me. He's on his flipping mind, okay? They've already endorsed Biden. They're going to all of a sudden change their No, they're not. And then he invited one auto worker in the crowd on stage and suggested workers would be rude by the union deal and potentially lose their jobs due to automation and outsourced manufacturing, which is a blatant lie. You know, that's just a lie. So, you know, if these people that work in that industry do not understand their own jobs and what automation is and, you know, what going to the next level could be, then they don't belong working there, period. Just get out. You know?
Amen to that one, Lori.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. You know?
You have not a majority. You have a minority of UAW workers who have a good job, middle class living, all kinds of toys, money to send their kids to college, and they become Republicans. God they're in a minority.
Yeah,
right. They are in a minority, and they can still win. But I think you have to get the vote out. And one thing that concerns me is younger people are looking at some of these issues, even if they're Americans looking at, like, Gaza, looking at that. That bothers them. And other issues they're talking about. You know, this guy Frost in Florida, he's young, but he's very bright. And I think he's the youngest one in Congress. He's very active. He's quite an organizer.
Yes.
And I see him on there, and I'm kind of happy to see someone like that there in Florida. But I'm just going to mention the book, that Art of the Deal, you know, the Art of the Deal that's supposed to be by Trump. It was by a guy named Brooks. I happened to listen to I just come across it. It's a video. He was the guy that wrote The Art of the Deal. And if you want to hear something interesting, and a guy who knows Trump, he started out over a year and a half meeting with him, and he gave a talk right before the first election, first time that Trump got elected, right before that. And so he had written that book, or was writing that book. And what he learned about Trump, he went through what kind of a person he was, what he saw in him, about his lack of truthfulness, his lack of ability, from all, you know, and then he wrote The Art of the Deal, and he felt a little bit embarrassed or ashamed in a way, because he was writing, wanted him to write what he wanted him to write. Trump didn't write that book. And it was very enlightening, because he spent so much time with him, and he would be short-tempered and didn't want to have too many questions. And I found it quite interesting. This is a guy who spent a lot of time writing the book about him that wasn't necessarily quite true.
But you know what? Yep. You know what, ladies? Trump couldn't write in a book because he can't put two sentences together, much less, you know, hold a water bottle to drink. The man is senile.
Right.
The man is crazy. The man has lost his mind. And the thing about it, so in this speech here last night, he was saying that, you know, the Justice Department has been weaponized by Joe Biden, which is not the case, you know. Mm-hmm. All the evidence, the receipts are there saying that he did certain things. 91 indictments. Letitia, what's her name? Attorney General
James.
In New York.
James.
Letitia James, you know, saying that she's going after him for $335 million, plus a three-year ban from doing business in New York. Fannie Willis in Georgia is going after him in a RICO case. You know, and the walls are closing in on Donald Trump. You know, so hopefully the Republicans come to the senses this August when they have the primaries and the conventions and say, here what? Donald Trump is too toxic. You know, I can't picture a presidential candidate in an ankle bracelet. You know, this is not who America is. You know, and we move from Barack Obama and people like Gerald Ford, who had dignity, and Abraham Lincoln and George Washington. I mean, everybody had the faults. Barack Obama, you know, but this scumbag, this orange, you know, succubus of Satan.
Yeah.
Why does he have such a grip on people? Are people that naive? Are people that, you know, fearful of immigrants and gays and women who have an education, have their own thing going? What is it, you know? What is it?
Yes, David. Yes to everything you said. He works on people's dislike for other people. He works on people's hatred. People hate Jews because they hate Jews. They don't know why, but they hate them. People don't like blacks. They hate them. Why? They don't know. Mm-hmm. They don't care. They just do.
Mm-hmm.
He goes after people's hates, and he makes people think their hates are beautiful and wonderful, and that's what they should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
But during his speeches, he insults them. Oh, you know, I love the poorly educated. I'm sure for that. What the hell? I'm like, what the hell is happening? What am I watching? You know?
I know.
Are you that
right,
dumb America? Some people in America and the NRA. Let's talk about NRA a little bit. You know, the NRA had the nerve the other day after the shooting when the Kansas City Chiefs had their, you know, Super Bowl parade for the people.
He's just kidding them because he has gone after the two pet peeves. He has saved their guns, and he's gone after abortion.
He didn't do too well with that. That turned around because all the states that have voted on it put it in their constitution, including like Kansas, like Oklahoma or Kentucky. They have put it in their it's like the dog caught the car. Yeah, and they're Republicans there. And the thing with the, I don't know if the thing with the immigration thing could turn around because they wouldn't vote on it because it would have gone the way that they wanted it more than ever has been. And but they have to tell the people that this was the bill and they voted against it because Trump said, well, I don't want Biden to look good. To hell with your border issue. So he really doesn't care. It depends on politically what it can look for him. He doesn't care about the real issue, just if it works for him. And if you keep it up, like the abortion was going for so long, and so when they finally did what they did, people are incorporating in the Constitution. So that could happen with the immigration if people understand that he did that.
But Trump's people are out there on the immigration bill spewing their lies, and they're doing it on social media. They claim the reason the Republicans changed their mind is that Biden went and packed it with a bunch of money for 10, 20, 15 other different things.
But if you just Google it or look it up, you'll see it's not true.
People are eating it up. That bill was clean. That was one of the cleanest bills that probably ever hit Washington.
Well, what they should do is pull the bill out when they have a campaign or an ad and just go through it. There was nothing in it but this. Because people are going to lie, but you have to confront with what was there. You know,
I have put that out to people that I've gotten into discussions with, and what they do is they hit a button, and then they give me information back in a comment that is the lies that the Trump people are putting out there.
Well, that's because you're dealing with Trump people, yeah.
It looks legit, but it's lies.
Mm-hmm.
It is social media lies. It isn't said on TV, and it also comes from Fox News.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is not news, we all know. Fox News is garbage.
Right.
So, okay, ladies, I want to talk about NRA a little bit. NRA, when the shooting happened with the parade, after the parade and everything, it's related to two youths. You know, two young men who probably are gang members. My question is, how did they get guns? Are guns that easy to get by teenagers? And, you know, their thoughts and prayers. I mean, how much time can I say thoughts and prayers? I could shove that thoughts and prayers. You know, they should do something. You know, red flag laws. You know, background checks.
How many good guys with guns were in that crowd and couldn't do a damn thing?
A whole bunch.
Over
the same down
cops.
In Uvalde.
And some of the cops, over 800 state troopers and local police were there, and thank God they moved into action swiftly, and it wasn't like Uvalde. You know, some were like frozen and wondering what the hell happening, but for the most part, the police did well, so congrats and kudos to the police in Kansas and the state troopers who moved, and for the people who helped and apprehended these two people, plus a third person, well done. You know,
yeah.
And America
yeah.
applaud you for it and will laud you for it and everything. And NRA have 3 million members. And why do 3 million members, they're so loud and so hostile? You know, is it money that they have so much power? How can we curb the NRA's power? You know, tell me, because they have the Republicans in a pocket. They refuse to know anything about gun control. What can be done?
Well, the majority of people want some changes, and that's the thing, that it's not happening.
Mm-hmm.
Even same with abortion. The majority of the people want the choice, you know. And the NRA had some setback with money. I forget what it was, but it wasn't that long ago because the head guy, you know, the head guy there was spending money. It was kind of a scandal.
I think he was doing more than spending.
Pierre LaPierre, he resigned because of some money scandal.
Yeah.
Right.
So I don't think there's proof they would be, but still, that argument with guns, the other side seems to win, but I don't think it has to be that way. If people get involved, if there's any election to get involved in, this is it.
And you know, we have to remember about Missouri though. Because Missouri is open carry, even without a permit. That's what's allowed in Missouri. So, and you know, the governor.
Well, Missouri.
Yes, the governor of Missouri was in that crowd. You know, he hightailed it to the hills. You know that, right?
Yeah.
With his tail between his legs.
Yeah, so Missouri is ranked 48th in terms of gun laws. So they're that terrible.
Yep.
So, you know, we don't hear things like this happening in Kansas, Missouri. You know, the people just went there to have fun. And you can't have it anywhere in this country again where there's a supermarket, church, a Super Bowl parade, victory parade, anywhere without some lunatic with a gun, you know? We'll see almost daily in this country. It needs to stop.
Can I just read about the Missouri law about their guns?
Yes.
Can I read it for a second? Okay.
Yes.
Missouri law generally allows firearms to be carried by adults, including anyone over 18, at parades, at any large-scale gathering, such as a parade downtown and the rally at Union Station, which were expected to draw thousands of people. After years of repealed gun laws at the state level, few restrictions remain to put any gun outside the law. Much remains unknown about the shooting, and it says two teens have been charged in Jackson County Family Court with resisting arrest and gun-related charges. But in juvenile cases, many facts, including the specific charges, and the names of the suspects are not made public. Court officials have said more charges are expected. Police have said they have recovered multiple guns, but have not described their make or their models. Individuals with a felony conviction or those with mental illness cannot legally have or possess firearms. That gun itself is not illegal. Possession of a gun by those individuals is illegal. Does that make sense? So the gun's not illegal, but the person that's holding the gun, that's illegal. So, and it goes on.
That makes no damn sense. That makes no sense. I'm confused.
That's my point. It makes no sense. It's like talking in a circle. And then restrictions based on age or other conditions. Missouri law has no age restrictions on using firearms or gun possession. The state has requirements for minors purchasing firearms, but it does not have a minimum age requirement to possess them. Federal law does not allow minors to carry firearms, but in Kansas, they can. And then it says last year, House Republicans voted against an amendment that would have banned minors from openly carrying guns on public land without adult supervision. The bipartisan effort failed. Under Missouri and federal law, people who are drunk or high on drugs cannot legally be in possession of firearms. So let's say you are getting ready to go to a party or some outdoor function, and you decide to bring your gun with you, and you decide to have a few drinks. So all of a sudden, that gun is illegal. I mean, if you're drunk, who decides if you're drunk? It makes no sense. It makes no sense whatsoever.
Well,
none.
The NRA, they don't make any sense, pure. They're like Republicans. They make no bad sense.
This is Missouri.
And
And then gun restrictions based on location. The law places restrictions on some locations, including schools, petrol buildings, large-scale venues such as sports stadiums, and like T-Mobile Center. Well, obviously, pay attention because I think that was a large-scale function, don't you? And then it says in the city. Possessing a firearm is prohibited inside a church or any place of worship, as well inside of any election precinct on election day or inside any state or federal building. If a business clearly posts a sign on its front door that they don't allow to carry, you're not allowed to carry within the business, you can take it in, then it becomes illegal. Craig Devine, a Kansas City criminal defense attorney. This makes no sense whatsoever. So you have the let's put the, if you have it on you and if and it's, you know, they have a sign on their door, no guns, you don't go in the store, right? That's all.
Right.
Don't go in the store. I mean, it's just, this is so stupid. It's stupid.
Well, yeah, Republican states usually are stupid because check this out, in Iowa, for example, Governor, what's her name? I can't remember her name, though. The one where Joni Ernst is suggesting them and Chuck Grassley. Kim Reynolds, Governor Kim Reynolds in Iowa. She signed into law a couple of years back that, you know, that blind people can legally own firearms. Now, legally blind people can't drive. You need a license to drive a car, yes. So since we have gun liability insurance, so when things like this happen, whoever owns a gun and purchases the ammunition, they get charged as well. You know, that would cut down on you know, people being careless with guns. You know, it's not that Democrats need to pick up with guns, but we'll have to be more careful with it, you know? What's
your thoughts on this? It's the biggest killer of kids today. The biggest killer of kids today, not car accidents, it's guns.
But gun insurance liability, that's a thing that Democrats can work on when they win the majority.
It is a start. It is absolutely a start. And I think you should be at least 21. I think you should have training. We talked about this before. I think you need a waiting period before you can, you know, get the gun. Get their training first, you know. If you buy it, sell it illegally. Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you buy or sell a gun illegally, then you, you should have a mandatory prison sentence. I say 10 freaking years. 10 years.
No, that's a 20. That's 10 is too light. 20 years at least. You know, 20 years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know, go at them with a hammer. I mean, honestly, you have to. Because we have a problem in this country. And, you know, these right-wing people, the only thing that they have to say is, you know, if it's our Second Amendment right. That's all they have ever have to say. That's the only thing they have memorized. They care about people.
Yes.
They don't care who dies.
It's 515-605-9802 is the number to call. This is Kitchen Politics 123 Radio Show with me, David Franklin, and Laura Picker in Michigan. And we'll have Naj calling in from Atlanta, Georgia. Hello, Naj. What's cooking tonight?
Ah, not much, man. It's relaxing. How are you doing?
Good.
Oh, good, good. We're talking about a whole host of things. It's open mic night. What do you have on your mind tonight?
Well, I saw this video earlier of a protest in Japan about the ceasefire, and there's an Israeli citizen there, and she's kind of freaking out, yelling at everybody, and I don't know, man. It just kind of encapsulates everything with that situation, to where look, protest is not a big thing in Japan, so to see that in Tokyo was kind of surprising, and the reaction to it and everything else was hilarious. Second thing, I guess, your man needs money. Your man is now selling sneakers. The NFTs and cards wasn't enough.
Yeah.
Now the boy is selling sneakers. Like, man.
They're the ugliest things I've ever seen.
Oh, geez, yeah.
$399.
Oh, and speaking of Naj, you know, somebody, they were bidding for sneakers, and somebody finally bidded $9,000 for that ugly pair of crap. I wouldn't wear that. You know, imagine the trailer parks, you know. They don't have any money to buy a decent home or rent a home or even buy food, but they're buying expensive $399 sneakers. It don't make sense. You know, help me make it make sense, because I don't know what's going on, for real. These people baffle me.
Well,
I try to understand them.
Yeah, the sneaker market is kind of different. The sneaker market is really weird. It turned into this, like, consumption-based scarcity con move. So people would kind of buy up whatever rare items would come out and then sell them for a profit. And they would kind of corner the market. So if they're, you know, if they were releasing 1,000, these kids would, you know, they try to get 200 of them. So the same thing is going to happen here, where they're going to release a limited amount. Somebody's going to buy them and try to grip some silly MAGA supporter into paying some exorbitant fee for them. And, you know, the grift continues.
It's crazy. It's madness. Let's talk about something very positive. The White House last Thursday passed expanded plans to cancel student debt. And the Education Secretary, his name is Miguel Cardona, he said while unveiling the plan, and I quote, "We'll leave no stone unturned in a fight to fix a broken student loan system." And it was at the White House recently, Thursday, as I say. And the draft proposal released by the Biden administration would empower education departments to discharge student loans owned by borrowers who are experiencing financial hardships and unlikely to be able to repay their debts. The department proposed a one-time debt relief program that would automatically cancel debt in circumstances where its data suggests that borrowers are at least 80% likely to default on their debts within the next 2 years. The proposal contemplates application from individual borrowers experiencing hardship. You know, so I think the Biden administration is leading the way in relieving student debt. As that opening clip by Rashid Tlaib, she was saying that the education secretary is like a vulture thing, vulture capitalist thing, where they know full well that some of these debt loans can't be repaired, and the interest rates on these debt loans, you know, so, you know, it outlines, this proposal by the Biden administration outlines more than a dozen factors that the administration will use to determine financial hardship, such as household income, total debt balance, history of loan repayments, and receipts for Pell Grants. So the proposal did not define specific thresholds for those factors. So, you know, what do you think about, you know, this proposal by the White House? Do you think it can go through Congress?
I haven't heard about it. Yeah, Congress is a whole other ball game, because they can really rally people with the idea of, I paid mine, why can't they pay theirs? So that kind of sentiment is kind of prevalent throughout America. But overall, this is a really good strategy, good policy. It actually gives something to those young folks who are somewhat disenchanted with the Biden administration. This is them coming back, circling back to them and saying, hey, okay, it didn't go through the way we wanted the first time, but we are going to keep fighting for it. So, you know, that's a beautiful thing. But college itself, at a certain point, we do have to look at these institutions and say, okay, do we just have hedge funds basically now, to where, you know, they have these huge endowments. It becomes a club, basically. You get in and network, and your job prospects are basically what your network is, not what you majored in or not what your expertise is. It's kind of a hobnob thing. So we really do have to explore, like, what are we doing with our colleges? Like, how do you justify the rise in tuition? How do you justify what people are actually getting out of it at this point? And again, I'm pro-college always, but I'm just looking at the scenario we're looking at now, to where it's like, look, if you're a college president, you're essentially a CEO. And is that what we want?
And not only that, like here in Michigan, we need carpenters, we need electricians, we need plumbers, you know, we need, trained people for things that, you know, you have to have training, you know, to, let's say, wire a house if you're building. You know, you have to have your plumbers. You have to have, you know, the for your roofs. I mean, everything. I mean, that is all apprenticeship stuff and classes. And that is a trade. And once you have your trade and your certificate, you know, the sky's the limit for you, because people will pay to get things done. You know, they will pay. You know, their electric updated, and they will pay to have, you know, new plumbing put in, or, you know, and it's very valuable. Actually, it's invaluable, because it's very valuable, because it will last a lifetime. And we don't have that. You know, I don't know about in your states, but here we're, you know, it's hard to find, you know, trained apprentices, or, you know, that have certificates for certain things that you need done in your house, because, you know, it's important that they know what the hell they're doing, you know, so we don't just need college, we need apprenticeships as well. I think they're just as important, because not everyone is college bound, not everyone, you know, so I think, you know, that would be helpful as well. So,
yes. Agreed. Okay, let's focus on Colorado for a minute. Lauren Boebert, the congresswoman from District 3, has abandoned her district and is now is going to be the nominee for Congressional District 4, which is an even deeper red congressional district. And the Democrat running there, he's a retired Marine Corps officer, Purple Heart recipient, proud father of four, a lifelong Democrat. His name is Ike. You know, he's running against extremist Lauren Boebert, who is a threat to everything we stand for. So Bobo the Clown, you know, abscond and ran away from her challenger in District 3, who almost beat her. She beat him by 575 votes. That's all, how close it was. And District 3 is red, you know? So, you know, do you think this guy, Ike, who's running against Boebert in Florida, Colorado Four. Do you think he saw a chance? Because Colorado Four is deeper red than Colorado District Three.
Oh, interesting. But the old one she was in, it wasn't this guy named Adam something? And it's
Adam
likely
Frisch.
That a
Adam
Democrat
Frisch.
Will win it?
Yes, Adam,
Adam
Frisch.
That?
He outweighs Boebert by 10 to 1. So she's run away from Congressional District 3, which she's currently representing in Congress, to run for Congressional District 4 against this new guy, Ike, who's a Marine veteran and a Purple Heart recipient, lifelong Democrat. Do you think Democrats can pull it off in Colorado 4? Because I'm sick of Lauren Boebert.
I hope so.
Depends on how many doors he knocks on. I'm serious. It depends on how many doors that man will go out there and knock on. I hope that's what he's doing. Because when you knock on a door and you look a person in the eye, they can tell whether you're telling the truth and you're going to be working for them.
And the power of social media is a good thing, too.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, but Doris, you're saying something.
I think when you're confronting... Oh, go ahead, Doris.
Doris, you're saying something?
Oh, yeah, I was saying, like, wherever Boebert was, that, and if she's leaving there, that looks like a district that will go Democrat. I mean, one more Democrat. We only need a few to really take over the House. And that looks promising overall. And I guess the district she's running in that's more red, I'm assuming that there was a Republican in that place already. So it's a net gain of one at least.
Yeah, Congressman Buck, who's retiring because he spoke out against Trump and he's getting death threats left, right, and center, he and his family. That's how low the Republicans have stooped. So, Naj, you're saying something. You're making a point.
Yeah, I think, and I think we need to think about the Herschel Walker situation, you know, last year or 2 years ago. I think we take the wrong approach with people like Boebert. So I'm not sure who this gentleman is that you're talking about, but I think the idea is they always try to keep their dignity and run a campaign that's above board and beautiful. And I say, no, you actually need to get in the dirt with these people. You actually need to show that not only is she unqualified, but this is not a very smart person who should be representing any state, city, county, or anything. So I think it's at this point, when you're debating a Marjorie Taylor Greene or a Laura Boebert, you have to go scorched earth. You can't get up there with this, you know, I'm going to be above the situation. Am I going to hit below the belt? No. Bring up the divorce. Bring up the restaurant. Bring up all of the things she said. Quote her verbatim. Show clips of her, you know, on the floor not knowing the process and saying, you know, the wrong thing and the wrong action and looking for help at all times because she's unqualified. So I just think Dems have to understand that. Like, this is, you know, this is the Untouchables, baby. You know what I mean? you said it before, David. They bring a knife, you bring a gun. Like, that's what this is. So, yeah, show who Lauren Boebert actually is. And, yeah, then you can actually beat her or get the turnout on her side not to show up enough because they'll be so embarrassed of her. But you got to bring it to them. We can't do this dignified stuff.
The guy in New York did. The guy in New York did, ran against that woman, Maisie. And he went right up and addressed the things. Instead of just talking about other things, he addressed right forward about what was wrong and what they weren't doing rather than, you know, avoiding it. And he that seemed to do very well for him. They thought that they had a good candidate in that woman. But I've always thought, why don't they address those things rather than looking the other way? And he did exactly that, and he won.
Yeah, address the lies.
Yep.
Show that they're lies, you know. Take them
and
up on it all.
Michigan 10th Congressional District, it consists of Southern Macomb County, Rochester Hills, in Oakland County. And currently, it's, the congressman is John James, and the population is just under 800,000. The median income household income is $71,936. And according to the Cook Political Report, the voter index is plus three Republican. So, you know, our candidate, Diane Young, with a plus three Republican lean, you know, I'm sure that, you know, she can pull up a upset and flip the district blue. Why? Because, you know, in the past, David Bonnier, he was the minority leader back then in the House of Representatives. He held it for many years. So I think there's a chance that, you know, this lovely lady who's running for the Democratic nomination can win the nomination and can beat John James. You know, and Lisa McLean next door in District 9, or District 10, in District 9, sorry, you know, we don't know who our Democratic opponent will be. You know, Lisa McLean has to go as well, you know. Because these people are all crazy. They're pro-Trump. They're pro-MAGA. And we'll say what a failure MAGA is. And, you know, ever since every election, whether special election or what, from 2017 right till now, MAGA Republicans keep losing. So, you know, the people listening out there, especially if you're from District 10 in Michigan, support Diane Young. You know, go to DianeYoungForCongress.com and contribute to her campaign and volunteer for her campaign, because this is a good woman. This is a serious woman. This woman will make a good congresswoman. We need more women in there. You know, what do y'all
think
about
this? She's coming Thursday, right? She's going to
be Thursday night.
Thursday.
Yeah, we're starting 9:30 Eastern, so she's coming on here about 9:40, 9:45. It's going to be about an hour. We'll talk to her, you know, have different questions, and hopefully take calls from you and other people who live in Michigan, and hopefully people from her district, you know. So good exposure for her. We want her to win. She's a good woman.
I was just looking in the last election, Marlinga, who ran against John James, only lost by 1,600 votes. That's all.
Yeah, he's been around a long time, Carl Marlinga. He was a sheriff, I think.
No, he was a prosecutor.
And a judge.
Yes, and a judge.
A judge?
Yes. Elaine, you're in District 9, right?
Well, I was. I'm in District 10 now. I don't.
Yeah, you're right.
Because I have moved these lines a couple times.
Yeah, and I'm in 9. I used to be in 10. Now I'm in 9. And you used to be in 10. Now you're in. No, you used to be in 9. Now you're in 10. So he only lost by 1,600 votes.
That noise.
So let's hope. This election, you know, she can pull it off, you know, and beat him and get out. And as soon as we find out who's running against McCain, McLean, we're going to try to get that person on the show as well. So because
I've got a state representative, I haven't got a clue who he is. I know I didn't vote for him because I voted a straight Democratic ticket, but I've got Republican representing my area from the state. I don't know where he came from. He replaced somebody by the name of McDonald.
Oh, I don't. I'm not familiar with that.
I'll tell you, the last few years between the pandemic and them changing these boundaries, I have been at a loss as to who belonged where.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see. You know, we saw saw Donald promote Laura Trump as some type of to try to push her into the GOP chair position. And, like, thinking about these races you guys are talking about, if they're constantly paying these legal fees and shifting everything to, you know, the election cycle for him, how does the down-ballot GOP representatives, how do they get money? Because if one entity is vacuuming all of the, you know, the real money towards themselves and making the party spend the money on the legal fees and everything else, how do these other – like this, I just think we're going to see something surprising from the GOP old guard, and that at a certain point they just say, you know what, no more of this. And I think we're going to see a huge backlash from Republicans. I mean, old guard Republicans with all of this Trump stuff because how much can you take?
I think people are tired.
Yeah.
You know, we're saturated with Trump. There isn't a day that goes by, you know, where you can't hear it, where you do not hear his name. It's disgusting. You can't even scroll without seeing his face. It's awful, you know. And I'm, you know, the judgment against him, that $350 million, I love that. And then he's got to pay another $81 million.
Oh yeah.
To, you know,
yeah.
I mean,
Eugene,
you know,
Carroll.
Yeah, Eugene Carroll. Yes, and you know, the next one, who knows? Because he still has Stormy Daniels. That's Stormy Daniels' case. And,
yeah, it's
going to
start in
I was about him. I was surprised to find out what the hell.
Oh, wait, hold on. There's a terrible feedback. There's a terrible feedback. I don't know what the hell happening. If somebody have anything on, could you turn it off, please? It's maddening.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah,
I
go
knew
ahead.
He lost one casino, but he lost. He bankrupted three casinos, and he's a businessman. Good, give me a break.
Who
I think for the more that comes out about it, there's
going
to be a lot of Republicans are going to quietly go to the polls. They might even wear their MAGA hat, and they're going to go to the polls and not vote for anybody. But the idea is they're going to have a 100% voting record. You know, you can do that too. You can go in there and you say you vote and you don't do anything to your ballot and then you walk out.
Yep.
Naj, you're making a point, Naj.
No, I was just adding to what she was saying. You don't bankrupt a casino, you steal from a casino until that casino is no longer solvent. Like that's what happened and we all know it. And it's, you know, it's amazing that this has gone for this long.
You know, I have to give him a little bit of credit because that man is the best con man that I think the world has ever seen. We can give him that credit because he is worth nothing else. He is just a con man, and he is good at being a con man. There's no doubt about it. It takes a special kind of human. Well, I don't think he's human, but goofball, or not call him, but to do what he does. I don't know how he lives with himself. I just don't.
Yeah.
He has no conscience.
Yeah, he has no compassion.
Yeah.
Okay, so Trump world takes him at... I'm sorry, I didn't need to cut you off. Go ahead.
I was just going, gosh, how did you think that Fannie Willis handled herself when she was on the stand the other day, and she wasn't even supposed to testify? I think she handled herself really well. I was proud of her.
I did
not take it.
Well, I think that was the strategy. I think she talked to a lot of legal minds, probably including her father, and that was the strategy came up with, to be combative, to be aggressive. I think a lot of women definitely understood a lot of the things she was talking about, especially that date scenario she brought up. Yeah, I think she handled herself well. Matter of fact, I don't think they actually want to put her on the stand again and go back and forth with her, because you might get diminishing returns, because she's really witty. She's really good at, you know, thinking on her feet. Yeah, again, the only issue is the cash. The only issue is always going to be they're going to try to create, you know, a certain amount of doubt because this person has cash in the house and they was using that, you know, to make certain payments. So no matter what, that's going to be the thing that she used. But her and her father, they did a great explanation for it. Like, look,
I know, her father,
this is something we always keep, emergency action.
Her father was very impressed. Yeah, her father
was
very impressed. You know, I didn't know he was a retired lawyer. And he said right out, he said, you know, I taught her to use cash. That's what she did. And to have cash in her house, in her possession. That's what she taught her. He taught her, you know, and that's what she said she does, because her father taught her. And so what? What is wrong with that? You know, nothing. If
that's the way she wants to, you know, use, you know, her cash or check and keep her cash if she doesn't need it to pay bills. There's nothing wrong with that. It's her money. She earned it, you know. And you're right. I don't think they want to put her on the stand because they know that she will eat them up and chew them out and spit them out.
When her father said that keeping cash in the house was a black thing, I got to thinking about that. In the time slot that her father grew up in, even though he was well-educated and an attorney, at any time he could have been arrested. And in order to get your get-out-of-jail card, you have to post a cash bond. So when he kept saying, that's a black thing, that is exactly why many, many very professional black people kept that kind of cash in the house.
Yeah, I had a black friend, a close friend, and as I understand that they just didn't trust a lot of the money institutions.
Yeah, this goes back to the Freedmen's Bank. This goes back to the Freedmen's Bank where black people put all of their earthly wealth into this bank, and they robbed it. The people robbed a certain group of people robbed it and destroyed it and, you know, took all of their money. So that was their Great Depression crash scenario, and a lot of tradition was passed down in not dealing with banks. Now, Fannie has bank accounts. She just says this is the emergency fund she keeps because, you know, like you guys just stated, like, you never know what could happen. So you operate from that standpoint. So, yeah, I think she did a beautiful job. And, again, that was strategy. They decided, hey, no, don't go up there and be passive. Be aggressive. Take it to them and have them on defense. And that's what she did.
She made it very clear the wrong people are sitting there. She shouldn't even be sitting there because she didn't do anything wrong.
Exactly. And even if they remove her as the lead prosecutor in this RICO case, the case is still started against Donald Trump, what a crook and a liar and a scumbag he is. And whomever takes over, can I finish my point?
Didn't she have a connection with Donald Trump?
No, and what does her personal life have to do with this case? Nothing. Nada, zilch. Okay. So these Republicans are drawing at straws. That's a point, you know? You know, so good sense will prevail, and the judge will keep her on, and Donald Trump is going down. He's going down so hard, and I'm happy about that. I'm happy, thrilled, excited. So do you think he's going to go to prison, or do you think that he's going to get house arrest? What his punishment? What's a good punishment for Donald Trump?
Well, some attorneys were saying they didn't think he'd end up in prison, but he would be on house arrest. You know, like in Florida.
And he lives in a damn resort. What sort of punishment is that? That's the thing. He lives in a resort wearing an ankle bracelet. That's not a punishment. Yeah. If it were anybody else, he'd be in prison for life.
But if they get a lot of his money on his resources, that will hurt him. Like half a million dollars they're talking about.
Maybe I'll get my wish and he'll be in a cardboard box down by the river.
I've been saying that since day one. I don't think you can put a former president in jail, but I do think you can put him on house arrest. So in the spirit of Napoleon getting put on Elba Island, and Yasser Arafat, when they put him on house arrest, like, there's a precedent for it. Like, I could see that happening. Him in Mar-a-Lago shouting orders at the wait staff and feeling like he's still, you know, the big man, but he can't go anywhere.
Yeah, and throwing ketchup against the wall in his tantrum like a child, a petulant wild child.
Right.
Man, there's something wrong with him. You know, so Republicans know they're going after each other because, as you know, Trump world takes aim at Republicans who support aid to Ukraine. And there's a push in the U.S. Senate recently where top Republicans, 22 of them, voted for aid to Ukraine in the form of $16 billion and $14 billion for Israel. And Donald Trump Jr. other Republicans across the country, like Ken Paxton, the Attorney General for the state of Texas. He wants to challenge John Cornyn because, you know, he's thinking, why he's asking the question, why did Cornyn vote for the aid package to Israel and Ukraine? You know, so he, you know, Cornyn may have a primary challenger in Ken Paxton. I just love how the Republicans going after each other, for real. Is that they're trying to out-craze each other. And I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Let them cannibalize each
Paxton
other.
Paxton doesn't go to jail. They're still bringing him to court, I think, in April. So that case that he's been avoiding, that's still not done. So Paxton still got some legal work to do. But, yeah, that's something, man.
Some MAGA people said if he got convicted of something that they wouldn't vote for him. If that happens and it makes some people not vote for him, that would be helpful.
Yeah, and that's why he wants delay
right.
for that reason. Because he knows people won't vote for him if he's found guilty, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
He gets to be too
all
high
of their chips are in the middle. All of their chips are in the middle. The whole so-called America First, which is a reworking of, you know, Ku Klux Klan motto from early America, the whole America First, Trump 45, all this stuff, it's all on the line, this election. So if he loses, the MAGA movement is dead. There's not going to be no donors who support MAGA politicians anymore. There'll be no GOP money to the side for MAGA. Like, they lose this, it's over. All their chips are in the middle of this.
Yep,
they
sure did. And one last thing I think we need to talk about for a couple minutes before we have to close. The FBI informant charged with lying about Joe and Hunter Biden's ties to the Uranian Energy Company. An FBI informant has been charged with lying to authorities about a multi-million dollar bribery scheme between President Joe Biden, his son Hunter, and a Ukrainian energy company. So, you know, all this rigmarole about the Republicans, you know, wanting to impeach him because of this $5 million, this just broke their case, and it's kind of a bunch of garbage. So an FBI informant has been charged with fabricating a multi-million dollar bribery scheme involving President Joe Biden, his son Hunter, and a Ukrainian energy company, a claim that is central to the Republican impeachment inquiry in Congress. Alexander falsely reported to the FBI in June 2020 that executives associated with the Ukrainian energy company Burisma paid Hunter and Joe Biden $5 million each in 2015 or 16, prosecutors said in an indictment. Smirnoff told his handler that an executive claimed to have hired Hunter Biden to protect us through his dad from all kinds of problems, according to court documents. Prosecutors say Smirnoff, in fact, had only routine business dealings with the company in 2017 and made the bribery allegations after he expressed bias against Joe Biden while presidential candidate. So he's already appeared in court in Las Vegas on Thursday, and he was charged with making a false statement and creating a false fictitious record, and he did not enter a plea. So there you go. More wasted by Congress once again. And then someone, and I didn't catch his name, was asked today about this. Of course, he was a Republican, and he said, "Well, we have more than this. This is baloney because we have bank statements. We have the, you know, different things, you know, and paperwork, and such, you know."
Yeah, it was James Comer. James Comer, the Ethics Committee Chairman.
Good.
And before that, there was another guy that ended up being, you know, not what he was supposed to be, or left did some criminal thing. They had another guy that they were saying. So it's like they just add something. It's losing their credibility if they have any.
Right. So just like I said, another, you know, more taxpayer money and time wasted. Once again, just wasted. And Joe Biden and Hunter Biden, nothing wrong. Nothing.
But for the low information Trumpers, it works because it's a smear, and they always remember the smear. They never remember the correction. So it works in that way. But we always knew they had nothing. And let me say this. We've all had people in our family who are troubled, and those people in your family who are troubled, they show up every Thanksgiving and Christmas, and they've got some scheme that they need you to invest in. And if you would just give money to it, it would work. Nobody invests in it. We all pat them, hey, well, you know, I'll get to you later. Does anybody think Joe Biden, who knows his sons very well and knows which son not to get involved with in anything, the idea that he would use Hunter Biden as a go-between, like, it's just ridiculous. And
I know.
With Citizens United, as we know, you can get foreign money legally. So if he wanted foreign money, he would be able to get it legally. There's no need for any of this. So this was always just a trash, right-wing, raggedy smear, and it's all falling apart, and they have nothing.
Yep.
And Hunter isn't even in government.
I know.
Right.
Unlike those grifters, Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner, Jared Kushner paying back $2 billion? They made over $64 million. When they're in the White House and everything. The Emoluments Clause was broken. Why aren't they in front of Congress testifying? What's going on? Imagine if Hillary Clinton did that, or any goddamn Democrat. Jesus. Yeah. The hypocrisy is astounding. Sickening, astounding. Put any adjectives for it. You know, it's just lunacy happening in the Congress now. And that's why there is a lot of, you know, 44% are independent voters across the country. And you can see why the upset with the political system, because, you know, the amount of rubbish going on now, caused mostly by Republicans. So, Thursday night show, Diane Young, she is running for the Democratic nomination for Congressional District 10 in Michigan. She'll be our special guest for 1 hour. The show is a 2-hour show. And we want people out there, especially if you're from Congressional District 10, to call in, speak with her, you know, reach out to her, tell her your problems, and tell her, you know, what you want to see better in Congressional District 10, because she's a good person. She deserves to be there, not John James. John James is a rubber stamp for Donald Trump. And people are tired of Donald Trump. Trump fatigue syndrome.
You know, is she running against James? I thought Marlinga. Somebody say something about Marlinga?
No, Marlinga.
Karl Marlinga, he ran last time.
Oh,
in
I see.
Election
okay.
cycle.
Yes, 2020.
Yes. So I don't know if he's running now or anything, but, you know, Diane Young, you know, mother, wife, you know, she's outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
She's outstanding. And like it was a +2 Republican district, it's winnable. She's going to win.
Oh, great.
And like Nash said earlier, that, you know, there's something brewing in the air that is going to turn so much against Republicans that we know what hit them. You know? And we can't wait for that to happen, because Republicans need to go. They can't govern. They're liars. They're hypocrites. They're all that thing. So, you know, let's see, you know, when, you know, the time comes, if people show up, you know, don't just talk and say, hey, you know, what's the vote amount? Vote them out convincingly. Because the Republican Party is dead, and Trumpism is going to die after 2024. Good riddance to bad rubbish, Donald Trump. You're going to suffer.
Yeah.
You're going to pay. So that has to be the last word. Doris, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Doris. Thank you.
Elaine and Naj, thanks for calling. And earlier we had Khalil from Virginia calling in and everything. I want to thank everybody for sharing across social media network. KitchenPolitics123.com is our website. And remember to go to Diane Young for Congress.com. She'll be our guest Thursday night. So until tomorrow night, same time, same place on Block Talk Radio. This has been Kitchen Politics 123. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico. Good night, Lori.
Good night, David. Good night, all.
Good night.
Good evening. And we will see you all tomorrow evening, hopefully. Good night, all.
Yes, and we'll leave you now with an upbeat tempo song by Leslie Gore, Sunshine, Lollipop, and Rainbow. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
sunshine, lollipops and rainbows, everything that's wonderful is right here. We're together brighter than a lucky penny. When you're near the rainbow disappears, dear, and I feel so fine just to know that you are mine.
How to play 100 songs on piano in an hour.
No way.
All you need to learn is 4 chords. These. One.
Thank you.